Thank you. When I first came in this morning about 9:15, there were just a few people here. And I thought, oh, everybody's at the bike race. You know, everybody's riding bicycles today. But that's obviously not the case because the room is quite full now. But what's the bike race for? Is it anything?
It's cancer.
Cancer. There was a lot of people on the road. Anyhow, is this a little echoey? But all right. It's really nice to be here again with all of you. I make it out here a couple times a year, so it's nice to see the changes that happen in the building every time I come. Floor's not so creaky as it was when I was here a few months ago. What I'd like to talk about this morning comes out of having just taught a couple of loving kindness retreats. One at Spirit Rock a few weeks ago, and then a weekend in St. Louis last weekend. And there's a particular aspect that really showed up for me around the loving kindness retreats this time. And it has to do with fear and the true source of safety and protection in our lives. How many here have practiced the classical loving kindness, either in retreat or on your own? Yeah, quite a lot. Yeah.
We had a retreat here yesterday.
You had a loving kindness retreat here yesterday.
Oh,
excellent. Well, this is very synchronistic then. Because classically, the way it's practiced is that there are four phrases that are repeated over and over and over again from the, well, when we do intensive retreat, from the morning, from the minute you wake up in the morning till you go to bed at night. So it's a repetition of phrases as kind of a mantra. And it's the reason that the phrases are repeated is twofold. One is, sometimes people aren't aware of, but one is the deepening of concentration. So loving kindness is actually a concentration practice in order to focus the mind and unify the mind so that the attention is just one-pointed. And as the mind gets more one-pointed and that focus gets stronger, there's more power in the mind. And that power, that kind of, it's almost laser-like when the mind gets very concentrated, that power, in this case, can then be turned towards the loving kindness. And so as we're repeating the phrases, and as we're focusing on the meaning of the words and cultivating the feeling of loving kindness, in the concentration that becomes stronger and stronger. So there's the possibility for this loving heart, this benevolent heart, to become very a tangible, very accessible, very even directed. We're able to direct that loving kindness both towards ourselves and towards others. And as that concentration deepens and as the cultivation of the feeling deepens, then it's possible to expand that loving kindness out in a very wide way, a very expanded way, to include eventually all beings everywhere in that benevolent field of loving kindness. So for many people, it's a very powerful practice. Some people connect with it, some people don't. Because in the beginning, it does take a certain amount of effort to keep the attention connected with the phrases again and again. Just like when we practice with the breathing, you notice how easily your minds wander here and there. And it's very difficult to keep the mind collected. And in the same way, it's true with the loving kindness, we have to use a great deal of effort to come back, come back, come back. But as we do that, there is the potential to really deepen this concentration. I'm going to lower this a little. It's just a little too echoey for me. I keep hearing this myself reverberate here. So the four phrases, the phrases have to do with four different aspects. One is, usually the order is, may I be safe and protected from harm. May I be happy as a mental happiness. May I be physically well as a physical happiness. And may I live with ease. So may I be safe, may I be happy, may I be healthy, and may I live with ease. And then the first we direct it to ourselves, and then we direct that outwardly. So the one I want to focus on this morning is this first phrase of may I be safe. May I be safe and protected from harm. Or may you be safe and protected from harm. When we were teaching the retreat, it was the Spirit Rock, a 7-day retreat, we were basically, there's many ways you can work with the phrases, and you really do make the phrases your own. You work with the words, and some of the, you really want to connect with the meaning so that when you say the phrases, it means something to you. And that's how you actually cultivate the feeling, because it's through the conceptual, in this case, through the conceptual connection with the meaning of the words, then it generates feeling. Whereas in Vipassana, you know, we let go of the concepts, we let go of the words, so we're clearing the mind and coming to more of a quiet, still, calm place within ourselves. Well, this is different because we're actually using the concepts to see if we can connect with something that's very meaningful, very deep for us. So when I say, may I be safe and protected from harm, then there's the possibility of really connecting with that deep wish that I will be safe. So we were putting out the phrases pretty much like that. And then there was this African-American woman on the retreat who we had questions and answers nearly every morning, and she raised her hand and she said, you know, I cannot wish for myself or for my friends to be safe from harm because I never feel safe. There's a way I never feel safe, and when I wish for my friends to be safe, I know that they don't feel safe either. So this doesn't seem like something that I can truly connect with or wish for myself. And it was an interesting reflection, because what it brought up is it's actually not, it's the phrase saying it that way isn't pointing to the whole meaning. When the Buddha taught these particular phrases, there was more to this phrase than to be safe and protected from harm. It's true that some people live in an environment where there's not much sense of safety, and there may not be. And even wishing for it or hoping for it isn't necessarily going to change that fact. Sometimes we just have, you know, our realities are as they are. Unless there are, you know, unless we have the good fortune to be able to make different choices in our lives, to be able to somehow change the circumstances so we feel more safe. But what the actual classical phrase is that the Buddha taught was, may I be safe from inner and outer harm. So there's the outer harm, and we certainly wish for an environment where we feel safe and protected from the outer harm. But the equally as important, and sometimes which we don't really reflect on so much, is to be safe and protected from inner harm. And sometimes the word is danger. We don't use the word danger very much because some people get triggered by that word. But sometimes the Pali is translated as danger. May I be free from inner and outer danger? And sometimes when we really look at our own minds, it can feel like our mind is dangerous to us, if we're honest with ourselves. You know, we can get in touch with a sense of something that can feel quite destructive within our own minds. So when we say in the loving kindness, may I be safe from inner and outer harm, we very much have to also reflect on what would it mean for us to create an environment within our own being, within our own mind, where we feel safe. And I think that that is really something that we can do something about. We may not be able to always generate a sense of outer safety. We can wish for that. We can hope for that. Particularly in these days when there's so much talk and in the media about the time of terror and evil in the world. But we can generate a sense of safety within our own being, within our own heart, within our own mind. And I really think, and as I kept reflecting on this, and we were talking about this during the retreat, I think this is the ultimate answer. To really feel safe and protected in our lives, we really need to know that inwardly we have a refuge where we can always return to and rest, have somewhere we can return to and actually just drop into kind of a quiet stillness, and that refuge is reliable. Isn't that a wonderful aspiration to actually consider that we can create an environment that's accessible? We can reach at any time we would like to, and it's reliable. So we essentially what we're talking about when we talk about safe from inner harm, we're talking about being safe from the attacks of our own mind. And I think that most of us, and maybe there's some of us in here who don't have this issue. I know it's not true for me. I have to do a lot of work to be safe from the attacks of my own mind and from my own internal conditioning and the way that that's manifesting within my own mind. And I see that basically this manifests as the critical negative judge. I mean, that's one way of labeling it, of talking about it. I think many of us have our own ways of labeling that. But we can, as we get more aware and sensitive to the patterns of our own mind, we can start to identify these voices, we could call them voices, these thoughts, these kinds of directives that happen within our mind that feel quite painful when we believe them. These patterns do seem like they are undermining our experience again and again and again. We have certain kind of experience arising, and then a thought comes in or a voice comes in and says, you shouldn't be doing that, you shouldn't be thinking that, what's wrong with you? You know, you're not doing it right, you should be doing it this way, da 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 da. You know, or however that judge may manifest. In a way, it sort of doesn't matter whether that judge is turning inwardly or that mind, those mental formations are turning outwardly, because whether we're judging inwardly or outwardly, we still feel the pain. It still hurts. And as we become sensitive, we know that. We feel that. When we judge another person, we're critical of somebody else, we feel the hot contraction of that judgment. And if I listen to and identify with this voice rather than a deeper wisdom of my truth that knows otherwise of what this voice is telling me, if I identify with it, I'll feel the impact of this voice. And that impact will be to feel like I'm bad, or I'm wrong, or I'm unworthy in some way, or I'm a failure in some way, or maybe, depending on how strong this is, we may even feel like we feel evil in some way, like we're so bad, we can sometimes tumble into that sense of feeling like, well, I'm the evil one, you know, it's here. Because of that inner attack, that inner voice. Sometimes we think that we're really afraid of other people and what other people are going to say or do or how they're going to hurt us or betray us. But I think as we start to become more and more sensitive, we realize that it's really what's going to happen within our own minds, how we're going to hold it, how we're going to handle it, whether the attack is coming from outwardly or inwardly. What are we going to do with that? And oftentimes what we do with it is we just tumble. We just tumble into this belief that what is being said about us is true. And as we tumble into that, we lose connection. We lose access to the true nature of who we are, the true sense of who we are. We lose connection with our benevolent heart, with the heartfulness that can actually hold that kind of attack, whether it's coming from the outside or whether it's coming from the inside. This is what I think gives rise to not feeling very safe, because I think that I don't have the resources to be able to handle the difficulties that arise inwardly and outwardly. When I start to believe these kinds of thoughts, whether they're coming from my own mind or from the outside, I think this is what leads to a mind that starts rejecting what is. It rejects the authentic experience that may be arising in the moment. And then I'm going to start to find ways to justify my experience or defend my experience or complain about it or compare or feel sorry for myself or wish that things could be different than they are. But from not from a place of wisdom, but from a place of kind of feeling self-pity. Oh, if things could only be otherwise. Things are so bad, things are so terrible, you know, from that kind of collapse, deficient place within ourselves. This is really the cycle of dukkha, the cycle of suffering. We tumble into it, and then we don't feel safe. And we don't feel safe, I think, because we don't really know who we are, and we don't really have a place to rest. So we're kind of scrambling. Do I go here? Do I look there? Do I pay attention to this? Am I this? Am I that? And it's this kind of scrambling, restless mind that can't really rest. It's very difficult then to know, to find out who I truly am. Who am I? And where do I go? Where do I go to answer this question? Usually I want to hide all this away, you know? I mean, I spent years hiding this away, you know, not wanting anyone to know that I was in this kind of inner turmoil or I had these kinds of thoughts about myself or I would attack myself in this way or that I judged other people. It's like, it doesn't really happen, you know? Just sort of avoid it, ignore it, pretend it's not there and just sort of push it away because I didn't want to acknowledge the truth of it to myself, let alone acknowledge it to somebody else, you know, say, yeah, this is really what's going on in my own mind. I found that I was afraid to look at myself, to see myself, to listen to myself. It was too scary to really find out the truth. So essentially, I was afraid of myself and what I would discover. A few months ago, I was doing a retreat with Sokni Rinpoche, my Dzogchen teacher, and he said, he just kind of threw out this very quick phrase. He said, don't be afraid of yourself. And I remember when he said that, it was like a little startling because I actually hadn't considered it quite in those terms, I think, until he had said that I was actually afraid of myself. I was really quite sure that I was afraid of everyone else, you know, and afraid of what could happen in the world and all the, you know. But to be afraid of myself, it wasn't something that I had considered at such a deep level. And the more, as the time goes on, the more I see, I think that that's really a lot of what goes on for us. I think it's a particular kind of fear. And I just want to say that it took me years as well before I even recognized the fact that I was afraid. I think that I was in the Vipassana practice for a number of years, and you know, the teachers would talk about fear, and I really didn't know what they were talking about, or you know, I didn't have fear. You know, it was like there was the so much of who I was buried so deeply that I didn't even know that I was afraid for a long time until I started to become more and more sensitive. So to really consider this, that I am afraid of myself. I'm afraid to see the truth of who I am at the deepest level of my being. I think that there's some truth to that. I think that often what happens is that we become somewhat alienated from ourselves because in a way we're so split off. We split off. I like these parts of myself, but I don't like these parts of myself. And so in a way we become somewhat fragmented. And in that fragmentation, we can't really fully know who we are, all of who we are. There's this really lovely poem from the 10th century Japanese woman poet who is also a great practitioner that many of us like to read. Watching the moon at dawn, solitary mid-sky, watching the moon at dawn, solitary mid-sky, I knew myself completely. No part left out. This is an enlightenment poem. I knew myself completely. No part left out. And I think this is really what our practice is pointing to, is this deep and radical honesty to be able to open our awareness, our mindfulness, to such an extent that we're willing and we have the courage to really look at every aspect. And the reason we do that is because something has to break the identification with these egoic patterns of who we take ourselves to be. Something has to break it, because otherwise we just get caught in the repetition of these habitual patterns of mind, which then create who we are, who we take ourselves to be. And nothing really breaks it, because these habits are so strong, the force of these habits are so strong. And so it's through the awareness where we actually shine the light, we turn the light of that awareness onto every part of ourselves, the thoughts, the feelings, the sensations, the emotions, the reactions, the ways that we get grasping and holding, all these ways, so that we can really begin to know ourselves and begin then to become free of these patterns and the way that they dictate our behavior and therefore our reality. Our practice encourages not hiding. And I think that's why this practice is not for everybody. You know, I mean, I have so much more appreciation now for people who actually make the choice to take this practice on. Because it is kind of a warrior practice. It has to be. You know, we can't do this sort of lightheartedly. I mean, we can, but we may not get the same results. I mean, this is a practice that is saying, yes, we need to see the truth if we really want to be free. And what does freedom mean anyhow? To really explore and understand the deepest meaning of freedom. Freedom from these identified egoic patterns of mind. So these practices, both the mindfulness practice, the loving kindness practice, are mind-turning practices. where we're actually turning our mind, rather than the attention going out to the thingness of the world, other, and things that we like or don't like, but to turn the mind back again and again, to turn the mindfulness, to turn the loving kindness back, to see what can be revealed, what can be understood as we do that in the moment. This intention to turn back again and again and again is the intention that orients us towards our own goodness. It orients us towards our own benevolent heart. Because that intention itself is a manifestation of the goodness. The intention is a manifestation of our compassionate heart. And as we, that intention to turn, because we want to know, because we want to awaken, because we want to live more from our goodness, is the goodness in action. And so every moment that we express ourselves that way, we manifest ourselves that way, we are reinforcing the power of our own heart, of our own wisdom, of our wisdom heart, is what I like to call it. And that compassion with the fear, as we bring it back to the fear, if we can contact the way that we may feel afraid, and particularly in relationship to if we can get a sense of that way that our mind is kind of hardened or judgmental, I think that it can be very, very useful to shift the investigation to actually see if we can feel the impact of that I'll call it an attack, just for purposes of the discussion right now. What does it feel like when somebody else says something to us that feels hurtful or judgmental? What does it feel like when we say something to ourselves that is hurtful or judgmental? Because I think once we start to become a little bit quieter and more receptive to the hurt, then we can allow, if in that place, we can begin to allow the compassion to arise for the one who is hurt. The compassion, it's like if we allow ourselves to feel the painful aspect, then compassion is the love that turns towards the pain. Compassion is what gets ignited when we allow ourselves to come close to pain. And so when we let ourselves feel our inner pain, and in this case, the way that we feel hurt when we think of ourselves with ill will, when we think of ourselves in unkind ways, when we treat ourselves in an unfriendly, a mean kind of way, that deserves some compassion. We really deserve to recognize that, so that we actually have then the ability to cultivate this compassion towards ourselves, and therefore then be able to generate it towards others. Compassion, the Buddha talks about compassion as like it has the feeling of like the mother holding her only child. And in the same way, we can, when we start to feel the fear, our own fear and our vulnerability and our hurt and our inner pain and our sense of not feeling safe, the place within us that doesn't feel safe, we can hold that with compassion, like a mother holding her baby, her only child. You know, it's the same kind of embracing quality. We can almost feel or have a sense of the experience of wrapping our arms around ourselves, you know, loving ourselves again in that place. This is the only thing we really want. At the deepest, deepest part of our being, we want to be loved. And so to be able to find a way to bring that love to ourselves is the most powerful, doorway that we can walk through. So when we feel these feelings of fear, or we feel these feelings of feeling hurt or wounded, we don't have to change it. Sometimes we think, well, then this isn't okay. It's not okay to feel the way I'm feeling. I have to be strong, or I have to pull myself together, or I have to be kinder. You know, we could even assert that as another judgment. You should be kinder than you are, you know. But we don't have to change it. And I think one of the things to understand here is that there's a difference between, this is a point in the practice, there's a difference between the dialogue, the thoughts that are actually being generated through the thinking mind, and the emotional feeling. And I think this is one of the most interesting keys to the practice for me, has been to separate the conceptual thinking pattern of mind and the actual feeling or emotional energetic sense that's arising due to the thought, due to the impact of the thought. So therefore, when I'm being judgmental towards myself, to ask myself, well, how does that feel when I do that? What kind of feeling is there when I do that? So as I come down into my body, so we actually bring the attention down into the body, it can be very helpful to use the breath to bring the attention down, to breathe and feel down in the body and say, well, what is the feeling here? And this way, too, we're not cut off from the rest of ourselves. We often stay so caught up in our thinking mind, in our ideas about things, that we may not be actually experiencing what's happening in our body and the impact that's happening in the body. And so then we breathe and feel. What is there? It might be there's some hardening around the heart. There might be contraction in the stomach. There might be energy running through the chest, and the hands may be numb, or the throat might be tight, or the face might be hot. What is that? And then as we come down into the body, we open and expand our mindfulness to include the whole physical experience as well. Through the breath, breathing, then that's part of the letting go. The letting go is that we're disengaging from the pattern of mind. We're not staying caught up, we're not staying identified with that pattern of mind. But through dropping down, opening out, breathing, we are actually letting go. Letting go and allowing ourselves to be very present with the direct experience that's happening in this moment. And through bringing the awareness through the direct experience, we have more space. And through the space, it allows the experience to move and release and open. So maybe as you're sitting here right now, you might want to just feel into what is happening for you. Still let yourselves come in to feel into your bodily experience. Breathing, the breath is very helpful as you let yourself drop. Even if you're, and then to see, just can you let whatever is there to be there, whether you're feeling resistant, whether you're feeling irritated, whether you're, feeling doubtful, whether you're feeling sad, or there's something being touched at an emotional level, of you're feeling more open or you're feeling happy. Breathing and let this come in. And noticing if you can feel the edges of compassion as you allow yourself to open and come into your experience in this immediate and direct way. Because the intention itself is the compassion. It's the compassionate awareness that we bring to this moment. In this way, then we can begin to enter into a truer relationship with ourselves. And that truer relationship is not only about who we are in the conventional way, our personalities and how our personalities manifest and how our behavior manifests. But through this clear and sensitive investigation, we can begin to see the emptiness of these patterns, the emptiness of our thoughts, the emptiness of these feelings. And emptiness meaning that this is not I. This is not who I take myself to be. These are changing, transitory, impermanent manifestations arising and passing moment after moment. There's nothing solid here. There's nothing substantial here. And as I drop more and more into the wisdom of that truth, then I start to touch into more of that which feels essential about who I am, that essential nature of who I am. I start to know myself in a very different way. I want to read this from Nisargadatta, one of the great sages of the 20th century in India. When you know beyond all doubting that the same life flows through all that is, and you are that life, you will love all naturally and spontaneously. When you realize the depth and fullness of your love of yourself, you know that every living being and the entire universe are included in your affection. But when you look at anything as separate from yourself, you cannot love it, for you are afraid of it. Alienation causes fear, and fear deepens alienation. It is a vicious cycle. Only self-realization can break it. Go for it resolutely. Only self-realization can break it. Break what? Break the patterns of identification. Identifying with patterns of mind that we take to be me, mine, I. We start to break that. Something starts to be revealed through the cracks. The cracks of that solid construction. And as we start to feel into that, and we can feel into, we can know that, we start to touch that which is the ultimate protection, the ultimate safety. And the reason that it is safe is because it is unborn. It is what we call the deathless. And that which is unborn cannot die. We touch that unbounded, unconditional nature of who we are. And nothing can disturb us. Once and for all. May all beings awaken to their compassionate heart. May all beings live with a deep wisdom. May all beings be safe and protected and know the deepest meaning of this safety. Thank you. Once again, it's time for us to end. Every time I come, I wish we had another 15 minutes. It's not time for some questions, but I'll stay here for a little bit. So if anybody wants to ask anything, please come up. But otherwise, thank you for coming and have a good day.